WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Ivan Raiklin Report with retired Lieutenant Colonel of the Green Beret, Ivan Raiklin. Ivan served 25 years in the Department of Defense, Intel and Special Operations Communities, and DTRA as an enlisted officer, civilian contractor on active duty, reserves, and National Guard across 5 states. Most recently, he was an instructor at the Joint Military Intelligence Training Center, teaching the U.S. intelligence intel community and international partners about intelligence analysis, national security, and multinational operations. And now, here is your host, Ivan Raiklin.
Hey, what's going on, folks? Today's Friday. I'm going to go ahead and launch a little Twitter space like we've been doing. And we have a special guest today that I want to introduce to you. Before we bring him in, I want to set the stage. So the last couple of years, we've faced a lot of medical tyranny across the entire country with, I think most of you folks saw the engagement that I had with, the failed Dr. Walensky as I shook her hand, introduced myself, and she happened to listen in as I asked her, or as I told her, I really looked forward to her testimony and her involvement in murdering over 38,000 Americans as it relates to the jab. Now, obviously, that ranges from 38,000 to 3.8 million and maybe even more. But nonetheless, today's guest I want to really bring in, his name is Brad Miller. He is I don't want to say retired. He's a former lieutenant colonel in the United States Army that thankfully refused to succumb to the illegal, immoral, and unethical and unconstitutional mandates that were implemented across the board throughout the DOD. And so I wanted to bring him in. His name's Brad Miller, and I want you guys to hear his story and see what the lawless DOD, what they've been doing to folks such as former Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller. And hopefully we can get him in here. There he is. So most people don't really know what to call you because you're not retired Lieutenant Colonel. You're a former Lieutenant Colonel, even though you're still a Lieutenant Colonel in terms of earning the rank. So Brad, tell us just real quick about your background and then we're going to do a little deep dive.
Yeah. Hey, thanks. And what I would say to that is, you know, whenever people kind of ask me, especially people who are unfamiliar with the military, whenever they ask me what they should call me, I say, hey, just refer to me as a former lieutenant colonel because, you know, I'm not retired. I don't want to misattribute, you know, a rank that I technically didn't retain. But here's the other thing. Don't take from me the fact that I resigned. You know, I walked away from the military with everything that was going on. And I'm proud that that happened. So for those who might not be aware of my situation, just a very quick abridged version is I was a battalion commander in the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, when the unlawful COVID-19 vaccination, that's not a vaccine, mandate went into effect. And
the EUA product coercion.
That's right. Exactly right. And so I refused to go along, and I was one of only two active duty battalion commanders in the Army that was relieved of command. And then I subsequently resigned. And so I left service with a total of just over 19 years, you know, all active.
So here, you came across my radar because, I mean, we're pretty much, I think, spirit animals. You're the active duty counterpart, almost quite to my scenario where, I mean, luckily for me, unfortunately for you, I'd already passed the 20-year mark in the reserves. And I was in a position where I was last year, I made the decision that, you know what, all these mandates, all this nonsense, I'm out, right? I don't want to participate in these unlawful, unconstitutional activities within our executive branch. So I wanted to disengage. And so I put in for retirement. And then in the process, I was picked up for battalion command, right? And I don't know if it was a trick or whatnot, but I did make the list. And I said, you know what? I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. I'm out. I'm not going to bend a knee on even telling you what my status is in terms of whether or not I allowed them to inject me with a DNA mutilation device. So we didn't even get past that point. It was something to the effect of, hey, you have to fill out this. Remember the form that was going around? You have to tell your status.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I said, hey, look at the fine print. Read it with me. You know, read our ABCs and 1, 2, 3s together here, leadership. Tell me where I'm missing the point here. It says here it's optional, and I opt to make it I opt to not respond until
right.
you can tell me the legal justification on responding to that questionnaire. Once you do that, I'll consider my next steps. In the meantime, I'm already submitting for retirement, so you figure out what you need to do.
Yeah.
In your instance, it's a little different because in the reserves, I have much more leverage, much more, like, they don't really control us that much, you know? Whereas on active duty, I mean, they're paying your full salary. They own you.
Mm-hmm.
So tell
yeah,
us,
that's true.
Tell us kind of like the, for those that aren't aware, Brad Miller resigned 19 years, 3 months in, I believe, right?
Yeah,
and
19 years, 3 months.
Would have been your last week, I believe, would have been your retirement day, right?
Yeah, May 31st. So yeah, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so May 31st would have been 20 years for me. That's right. Yeah.
It's so amazing because you're putting everything on the line, not knowing what's going to come next. And that's why I mad respect. I'm going to have to go just street jargon here, man. Brother, you're literally, like you said, one of two battalion commanders in the entire Department of Defense that said, you know what? I saw your previous interviews. A lot of people were like, hey, let me do the religious accommodation. I felt to myself as well, it's hard to say more fundamental. I don't know if that's the right term. It is more holistic, and like religion is obviously a core value, but it's more than that. The entire scheme and operation was so unethical, immoral, and illegal holistically for them to force this on us. You took you took the hard line, like you said.
That, yeah, you know, so what, my stance on that was
a handful of reasons, I'm a no.
Yeah. Yeah. So my line of thinking there was, hey, of course I do have religious objections, and they're quite weighty objections, but it's more than that. Like you just said, because a lot of people who had religious objections, they might've just been, objecting to some of the research or the ways in which these products were developed. Right. But for me, it was, hey, I'm not going to concede that these are safe. I'm not going to concede that they're effective. And
right.
I'm not even going to concede that they're completely necessary. This whole thing is, you know, it's based on fraud. And at the end of the day, the mandate itself was predicated upon, you know, the misrepresentation of an unlicensed product as fully licensed. I mean, this thing just is wrong and unlawful from top to bottom. And interestingly enough, yesterday on my Twitter, I just put out a question. It wasn't really like a formal survey or anything, but I just put out a question where I said, hey, can anyone name a single general or flag officer the last couple of years that has not gone along and you know, put their own career ahead of the Constitution in the country? So that was maybe not quite 24 hours ago that I put that out there. And I mean, I'm still waiting for a name, and nobody's been able to give me a name of a general, a one-star general or one-star admiral or above that was at that rank at the time that has stood strong, you know, and put the Constitution in the country ahead of their own career, ahead of their own pension, or, you know, whatever. Now, there are some retired individuals who have spoken out, don't get me wrong, but currently serving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the general or flag officer rank, I'm still waiting for a name for a single one. You know, the closest I got was maybe an Air Corps officer.
It's called the Mike Pence toxic, feckless, stone cold cowardice. That's the terminology I like to use, but.
Yeah, the closest I got was was maybe an officer who had been selected for one star, but then was, you know, pushed out. But in terms of someone who was currently serving at the GO or the flag officer ranks, can't think of a single one that has stood up and is actually on the side of the law. And really, just at the end of the day, here's what we're looking at. We're also looking at, it's not that it's just unlawful, but we're looking at the strategic destruction of the military and then kind of by extension, the country. I mean, you know this, so
Right.
You talk about this all the time. People got to understand the real ramifications of exactly what is going on. Our army is being held hostage.
Absolutely. So I want to hit a couple points here. The global perspective, because I looked at your background. I did a little research. And pretty substantive. I mean, a lot of times you think of a traditional infantry officer, you go through a very traditional path of, for those that aren't aware, you know, platoon leader, then you do your staff time, then you do company command, then you do maybe brigade staff, and then you go into a battalion command position. But looking at your background, it's very, very unique where you spent time on the staffs that you did spend time on were very, I don't want to use the term anomalous, but unique in the sense that in Honduras, you were at JTF Bravo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Joint Task Force Bravo as a planner. So that's in Central America, essentially coordinating and facilitating the fight against the drug trafficking and human trafficking flows from Central, South Central America into the United States. And then also you worked at the United Nations Command, I think, as well, right?
Yeah, in Korea. So I was, spent 3 years in Korea. Right. So yeah, so a very interesting position there as well, working for specifically the Military Armistice Commission, which kind of administrates the demilitarized zone and then anything that has to do with the specific armistice, which was signed at the close of, you know, the hostilities in Korea to
kind of, actually, let me correct myself, because I said you worked for the United Nations. That's a misnomer. So the technicality is you were an American officer assigned to a trilateral command in Korea, one of those subunit, or I guess commands, if you will, as part of United States Forces Korea. Adjacent command is the what is it, the CFC, right?
Yeah, right. So United States Forces Korea, Combined Forces Command, and then United Nations
and then
Command.
United Nations Command.
The three commands there,
Right. You have the unilateral U.S. command relationship, then you have the bilateral with Korea, and then you have the UN peacekeeping, or you can tell me better.
The wider multinational umbrella. And in fact, within the organization, we had officers from quite a few countries, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and quite a few others as well.
And that's, I think that experience allows you to, I think, understand the global strategic context in the sense that it's not only the United States. You got 192 other countries out there that are basically vying for influence and power throughout the globe amongst the individual influencers in there. And right now, you know, the big boy on the block, I hate to say this, is the Chinese Communist Party. And we saw that, I mean, they're only escalating in their influence, using and leveraging other nations that also wants America to quickly fall to the wayside, namely Russia, right? And then some other ancillary players. So they're working in concert. We saw that between Xi and Putin recently meeting, where they're, I argue that, you know, China's taking that first place and then Russia's trying to help to get into that second position. But they have to do that by destroying us from within. And if you watch what they're talking about, they want our country to be fragmented, not only along groupings, right, and then the concocted subdivisions that they're making across the social media platforms, but also essentially dividing up states where people are talking about breaking apart, right? So that's the global play, and they obviously leverage U.S. influence spheres to help get to that end state. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think there's a massive cultural war going on that that a lot of Americans probably are unaware of. I think they may understand kind of the big picture. Hey, geopolitically, there's quite a lot going on, and you know our country has some pretty significant rivals at play. But also, what people need to realize that within our own borders, I mean, there are significant cultural problems going on, and when we see. I think one of the biggest strategic threats that we have right now that comes from within is what's going on with our own institutions. I mean, clearly we just talked about the military, but I mean, it doesn't stop there. I mean, look at what's going on with within the organs of our government, or look at what has happened with our medical establishment the last couple of years. So, I mean, unfortunately, Americans are starting to lose faith.
If you know history, back in, I think, the 30s, the Great Purge under Stalin in the Soviet Union, where literally those that were critical thinkers and the most professional thought leaders within the Soviet Union, Stalin purged them because they were critical of some of the decision-making process. And they were totally thrown out of the system. That's essentially what's going on right now. I think some estimates are that 60 to 80,000 the most physically fit, thought, you know, critical thinkers like you and I, 80,000, that literally the top 80,000, just to put it in perspective, I'll give you three examples. So myself, right, being one, you being a battalion commander for the 82nd Airborne Division, right?
Yeah, 101st.
Or excuse me, 101st Airborne Division, which is, you know, it's arguably, well, I should say it's the most capable air assault division organization on the planet, right?
Yep.
And so when you take out the top, I would say, of officers that are in that position, we're talking less than 5%, right? You know, a couple of percentage points. So your top tier individuals that are, if you leave them in there, help the organization grow and learn to autocorrect itself, are being essentially forced out based on cultural, moral, ethical, and more importantly, due to unlawful activity of those around them, they're forced to leave. And now that institution is literally castrated.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that castration that you referred to, because you also mentioned immorality, there's a moral castration that's occurred too. So, you know, one of the most significant impacts that we see is the correct term to use is, you know, moral injury. So what's moral injury? Well, it's this phenomenon that occurs when you act in a way that goes against your own moral code, or you witness an act that goes against like an organizational moral code. Well,
and you're,
the military has always had a very strong moral code. Right. Yeah, I've written about this on my Substack.
If no one has a clue who Brad Miller is, it's on the bottom third here. It's bradmiller10.substack.com. And you write Substack articles that I want to write, but if I were to write them, it's literally about 10% of how well you wrote them. And I think I told you this on a phone call a couple weeks ago. When I read that, I'm thinking to myself, wow, that is amazing. Brilliant. I wish I could write that well, because the level of precision and how you conveyed the moral ethical dilemma and your request of, go ahead, go into that particular Substack.
Yeah, so that one, moral injury, which again can be found at the site that you just mentioned. I have one that is specifically entitled moral injury, and I kind of talk about this phenomenon. And I say, hey, listen, we have an entire force out there right now that is morally injured. So you can look at individuals like you and me that, under normal conditions, would still be serving in uniform that are not. I would say to some degree, you and I are morally injured, right? But also, there are plenty of other individuals who are still serving right now that are morally injured. Think about all the individuals that were coerced into taking a shot that they didn't really want to take. Now, some of those are very clearly physically injured. But on top of that, they may also be morally injured, or the ones that aren't necessarily physically injured, or at least not yet, they're morally injured.
You and I probably know a lot of guys that ended up like pushing back, and then they held the line for a while, but at some point they broke and they didn't want to do it, but their circumstances, financial, whatever, they just couldn't do it and they regret it. And now that all the information coming out on Twitter files, et cetera, they regret it even more. So it fits into the whole moral injury that you're talking about.
100%. Or they at least thought that there was a product that was actually approved. Then what happens when you find out, oh, that was all fraud. There was never actually one that was approved that you could actually get. So you can imagine how that makes you feel when you're part of this organization. You know, we'll use the Army. You and I are both in the Army. So we have the Army values. Right. And then you say, hey, wait a second. I have these values. I thought the organization had these values. Why is the organization not upholding the values that it has always sought to inculcate in me and in others? And when you have that massive moral misalignment there, the way that it manifests that self is called moral injury. And a lot of times what happens is people, if they were a part of it, because here's what's going to happen. You have a lot of people who are morally injured, but they were also perpetrators of the moral injury. They were kind of in between.
Yep.
They were backed into a corner. They did something they didn't want to do. You know, like they took the shots themselves, but some of them also coerced others to take the shot. And now they feel the weight of that decision as well. So they're a victim of moral injury, but also a perpetrator of moral injury. So now they feel completely conflicted. Some of them are having trouble putting the uniform on every day. And there are plenty of these individuals that are now looking for the exit. They're like, I can't do this anymore. The military is not what I thought it was, or it's not what it was when I joined. And now I'm,
I just got a call. I just talked to a buddy of mine that was, he was a staff officer at Special Operations Command, battalion, lieutenant colonel, was selected for Army War College and battalion command. This guy's, you know, he's a solid dude. He's got every single cool guy patch you can think of, SF, Ranger, you know, Halo, Pathfinder. You know, the list goes on, right? Good friend of mine, went to the Q course with him. And he's like, Ivan, I just, I'm following along, bro. I can't do this. Remember, a person that gets selected for Army War College, what's that? That's less than 1%, right?
Yeah, it's certainly low. Yeah, I'm certainly low. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking in terms of somebody getting in and then getting to that point. It's just around 20 plus years and they refuse it. It's basically, you know, for the rest of the force, they're like, whoa, wow, why are you doing this? Well, you might want to ask why they're doing this. And then go into detailed analysis of the critical thinking that they took to get to the point where, you know what, my beliefs and why I joined this organization were this, and it's no longer there. So we have now diverged. The institution has diverged from the core values and principles upon which its most valued individuals came into that institution for. And so what are we left with? We're left with toxic, feckless, stone cold cowards.
Yeah. So these cowards who kicked out, this is the way I look at it, right? So these commanders who unlawfully separated people for being critical thinkers at the end of the day, or for being, you know, religious or both, right? Those commanders kicked out people better than themselves at the end of the day. You kicked out the critical thinkers. You kicked out those who had values strong enough that they were willing to lose their job. I mean, at the end of the day, that's kind of what we want. I know it's seemingly paradoxical, but like, you have people who are willing to lose their jobs or willing to lose their commands because their values are so strong. And those values are actually the values that we've always said that we prioritize. So, you know, you're right. There's a mismatch going on. And this is a strategic threat. So Americans need to realize that we now, our military is being held hostage. And this does represent a huge strategic threat to the security of our nation.
So I agree 100%. I mean, I think I'm talking to the mirror here, but you're more eloquent in presenting.
I got a little bit more hair. Look, I got enough hair.
You got a little bit more hair than I do. Absolutely. You're a little younger, I'm sure. So let's bring it back to, let's personalize this. So talk us through from the time that you resigned.
Yeah.
To today. What impact has that had on you?
Yeah, so you know, if we're personalizing this, when you get close to that kind of, you know, 18 and a half, 19 year mark, and let's say you're going to get out right at 20, when you're starting to put your retirement in, you are making plans based on the fact that you know that you're going to have a pension. So then what happens when relatively abruptly all of a sudden you don't have that pension that you, one, had worked for 19 years, but two, had been, you know, kind of expecting. So now that really changes the way in which you've got to move forward. So since I left,
right. So obviously, you know, your financial your income went to zero. Is my
guess. Yeah. So exactly. So, you know, for me, the way I look at it is there are three things I had to sacrifice. One was my command. Two was the remainder of whatever my career would have been right after battalion command. And then three, of course, was the retirement pension and all that entails. And so, you know, hey, we're talking about me, but this is similar situations have happened to plenty of other people too. So now I'm in this situation where I look at our country and I'm like, okay, I don't have my retirement pension and I got to find employment. And I've done some things the last couple of months, but now I'm looking at, hey, I took the uniform off, but there are a lot of ways in which I can fight for our country more and better now than if I were still constrained by wearing the uniform. And I'm still very much in the fight for truth and freedom, just trying to figure out, you know, how best to do that, right? And make a living at it as well.
If I may throw an idea out there, I know you got your Substack, and folks, if you're listening, please take a look and let's get him back whole so he can get in the fight. Obviously, you have convictions. I want you in the fight. Have you thought about putting together maybe, I hate to say it, put together a Give, Send, Go, and I'd be happy to basically help you get on shows to get you whole so that you can, at least for the next year, get in the fight, let people know what occurred to our military over the course of the last several years, And then as we start to claw back our country, we might be in a position where you and I would be amenable to actually returning into the force to rebuild it back up from the ground up, essentially culturally. And maybe you'll only have to do it over the course of a 9-month active duty tour from the National Guard or the reserves.
And then you bring up a very interesting question is, you know, hey, where do we go from here with our military, and how do we, you know, and not just me, but everybody, right? Hey, how do we make these individuals whole? What do? We kicked out some of our best and our brightest.
Let me answer that first and you continue. And we have 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
I think we have to convey, you and I and folks like us and Doc Chambers, et cetera, we need to go around the country and explain that what happened to all of us was at the behest of the FBI. And then later on, our very own DHS, where they manipulated, coerced to make sure that only content that said that these pharma products were legit, and anybody that questioned it and provided evidence to the contrary were illegitimate. Like, all roads lead back to those individuals. And I got names, I got receipts, and that's why I go around the country and speak and basically do that link analysis. And so when we get the preponderance of the country to see that, then we can start to get also folks in our institutions to understand that they were also duped, because people in and out of the military, we're human beings, we consume similar content, and we were all manipulated. And once we see that, we can start to clean up our institutions, starting with the FBI, DOJ, the disinformation government stuff. Like, we need to have First Amendment discourse so that we can test hypotheses and then update and correct them as new information comes in.
Yeah, you're right. Everybody, all of us to some degree were manipulated, received, faulty information for sure. And, you've been carrying a heavy rucksack. You've been at the tip of the spear, really fighting the fight. So, thanks so much for having me on. And I just appreciate everything that you're doing. And I really appreciate being able to stand shoulder to shoulder with you in this fight for sure, Ivan.
No, absolutely. We have to end here. If you want to jump in, I have a Twitter space going on right now, if you want to continue the conversation.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually.
Questions.
Okay.
With that, Raiklin Report out until next week. Stay tuned. Next week's going to be pretty explosive with John Durham testifying.
Hello, I'm Brandon House, and the MyPillow 2.0 is now available. This has new cooling technology that was not available when Mike first